From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens where you mix the two, and where, like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host this afternoon, along with Phil, Lil, and Josh. Say hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay. And we'll be your hosts for the next hour as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 30 of Little Brother, dated... What's today's date?
The 5th
of January, 2002. First episode of 2002.
First one of the new year.
First one of the new year. So let's make it a good one. Stay tuned. Little Brother, be right around the corner. Okay, and before we get started, we need to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of WRPI, the Rensselaer Student Union, or Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. If you'd like to throw in your opinion, please feel free to do so. The phone number here is area code 518-276-6248. That number again, 518-276-6248. If you're feeling like you don't want to put your voice on the air, you can also send me an email. My email address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That's critter, C-R-I-T-T-E-R, at verizoneatspoop, all one word, .com. And lastly, you can send me snail mail. Send it to WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Box 31, Troy, New York, 12180, and that will get to me. So without further ado, let's get started. We'll start with our usual array of stuff from the Risks Digest. A recent series of four newscasts on the Fox Network alleged that U.S. telephone call records have been falling into the hands of international organized crime. Call records allow traffic analysis, but do not disclose the contents of the conversations. However, the newscasts further alleged that the equipment used by the FBI to do the wiretaps authorized by the Calais legislation of 1994 has been compromised. It's said to contain backdoors that allow unauthorized persons to obtain access to contents of telephone conversations. The backdoors were not put there by the FBI and are not under their control. One of the newscasts cites an example of a 1997 Los Angeles drug case in which access to the telephone call records was used to completely compromise the communications of the FBI, the Secret Service, the DEO, as it says, and the LAPD.
Wow, if that story is true, that would be the very first time that Fox News has had a broadcast that's anything other than completely content-free. that would be the first time they actually had an actual story.
There is a first time for everything.
It's amazing.
It is. I mean, look at their choice of Afghan correspondent. I mean, you've...
Oh, yes. Well, worse than that, they always, before that even, they always had this one fella come on that would say, your tax dollars paid for it. And he was always talking about things that everybody knew about like a decade ago. You ever see that?
I think I have, yes.
Yes, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fox, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's very irritating.
Two top companies, Microsoft and Oracle, have issued new statements acknowledging security flaws in their products. Microsoft Windows XP and Oracle, the 9i application server, which the company had insisted was unbreakable, resulting from a vulnerability called buffer overflow. Both problems could have allowed network vandals to take over a user's computer from a remote location. Microsoft and Oracle have released software patches to close the security holes, and a Microsoft executive says, although we've made significant strides in the quality of the software is still being written by people, and it's imperfect. There are mistakes. This is a mistake. Duh.
You know, saying your software is unbreakable is kind of like asking for it. It's like saying the Titanic's unsinkable.
Yeah, you got a point there. No question about that.
And if you say it's unbreakable, people all over the world are going to try anyway.
Well, you know, you try to make something foolproof, and you'll always fail because fools are so ingenious. Another article on the same topic says Microsoft's newest version of Windows build is the most secure ever. contains several serious flaws that allow hackers to steal or destroy a victim's data files across the internet or implant rogue computer software. A Microsoft official acknowledged that the risk to consumers was unprecedented because the glitches allow hackers to seize control of all Windows XP operating system software without requiring the computer user to do anything except connect to the internet. Microsoft made available on its website a free fix for both home and professional editions of the Windows XP and forcefully urged its consumers to install it immediately. You've installed it, right?
I'm running 2000.
Oh, okay. That's right. You told me that. You downgraded.
OS X.
Yeah. Go Mac.
The only way.
I'll take my Linux. Thank you very much.
That's pretty much OS X.
Yeah.
It's pretty close, yeah. Microsoft's newest... I read that paragraph already. The vulnerabilities involved the universal plug-and-play features and were discovered by a team at EI Digital Security Incorporated of Aliso Viejo, California, led by Mark Mayfrit. There were also subsequent reports that the free fix was not adequate. By the way, the free fix can arrive automatically with Drizzle, which allows Microsoft to upgrade for you. The moderator of the Risks Digest advises that you beware of mechanisms that offer automatic upgrades, no matter how convenient they may seem. The article also quotes Microsoft's departing corporate security officer, Howard Schmidt, who is about to join Richard Clark in the White House, expressing frustration about continuing threats from overflows. He says, quote, "I'm still amazed that we allow these things to occur." You know, as I think about it, I think that the buffer overflow attack has been the single most exploited attack on Microsoft software over the years. They have been using this attack since 1995, and for some reason, they just haven't got it yet.
They're amazed that they're still allowing these faults to exist in their software. They think they're amazed.
Jeepers.
Go, Bill, go.
Go, Bill, go. Please go. As those familiar with computer risks know, many internet users think that HTTPS is equivalent to security. Here's an example where that badly went wrong. This was submitted by Jeremy Epstein to the Risks Digest. He says, "My employer uses an online service to handle signups for flexible spending plan. It uses an HTTPS form to collect the usual personal information, name, address, social security number, and the amount to be deducted. So far, so good. I don't know what it does with the information. Presumably, it puts it in a database, which, of course, has its own issues. Then, they email the information back to you for confirmation, including the social security number."
There's your security hole.
Interestingly, somebody at the company understood the risks because their security and privacy policy on their homepage notes that unencrypted email is not safe. Whoever wrote that policy is obviously not working with the people building the system. The response when we pointed the problem out was, "Well, we use HTTPS, so we're secure." After several rounds of back and forth with the vendor, they admitted the problem and proposed to fix it early in 2002. Since this is software that gets used once a year to meet the December 31st deadline, that was clearly a silly proposal since all users would be forced into using the incorrect version. So after some arm twisting, they changed the confirmation message to eliminate all but the last four digits of the social security number. A big improvement. The risk here is that this is a commercial system that's presumably used by many other companies besides ours. How many other companies use this flawed system and never objected? And how many other equivalent systems are there out on the net? If I were looking for an easy way to commit identity theft, I would be monitoring emails coming out of that company. Chances are, there's a lot of good info, which is why I'm not giving out their name or URL. Peter Hoopermans writes, "I came across an ad in computing for the new Samsung GT9000 Pro notebook, one of the laptops following the trend to have a fingerprint scanner built in. Envisage, switch on the machine, press your thumb, and you're logged in. Or for the sake of administrators' thumbs, one would hope that they'd allow a file update for a mass rollout, but I digress. Now, after this highly sophisticated, technically advanced piece of biometric technology has reliably authenticated you, you can immediately start to work on your corporate network via the built-in wireless LAN card. Duh." Let's see here. Last week, was it last week? No, I guess it was the week before we talked about the risk of identity theft without knowing a social security number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right, because you guys weren't here last week. That's right. Well, Brett Harmon has some additional comments to throw into that one. He says, "A few years ago, I had the pleasure of writing a program to pull credit reports electronically. During the testing, I learned that one only needs two of the following three pieces of information. Name, defined by last name and only the first three characters of the first name. Social security number. And address. Given any two of the three and making up the third, you can obtain a legitimate credit report. Consider how easy it is to find anybody's name and address. This makes it a piece of cake to get their social security number and other interesting information. So that's what we have from the Risks Digest today. If you want to throw your comments in, please feel free to do so. Area code 518-276-6248 is the number here at WRPI, and we would love to hear from you. Let's see. Clear Channel Wireless has launched a new high-speed internet service in southern Ohio that transforms a latent portion of the digital television signal of WKRC-TV into a 256 kilobit per second downlink for enabling the computer modems of subscribers. A quote from them says, "As entrepreneurs, we saw the holes in the high-speed internet service convergence map." This is from their CEO or COO, Leon Brown. He says, "As broadcasters, we saw the opportunity to provide a service to the unserved users in those areas while delivering free, high-definition television to the viewing public. Delta V, which is the name of their product, is the answer to both of these diverse public needs. The new Delta V service is targeted at home and small business internet users who cannot obtain high-speed access to the internet from other sources. Currently available only in the Cincinnati area, Clear Channel Wireless plans to roll out its new service in the USA and other USA television markets beginning next year. Named after the scientific symbols Delta for change and V for velocity, Delta V works in conjunction with an internet service provider to speed file delivery to the end user. The platform is provided through digital television signals and transferred to the computer through a special PCI card, antenna, and proprietary software. Delta V currently is working to provide high-speed internet downloads to all locations within the 24-county area served by WKRC-TV's digital broadcast signal, which originates in Cincinnati. With Delta V, the data request goes out via the subscriber's traditional modem connection to the Delta V router, which accesses the requested information and transfers it back to the subscriber via the return channel that has been embedded into the television signal. Clear Channel Wireless has taken the lead in utilizing, and there's a lot of corporate bluster after that. So we'll skip that.
You know, I was reading actually the other day that there's a company going around buying up old UHF stations and converting them to transceivers to do the exact same thing and not need your modem to send out the information, that it'd be two-way communication via wireless.
Well, sure. Actually, we did some discussion on that same on that very same topic some maybe 7 or 8 months ago.
Really?
There was basically it's what has happened is the FCC is trying to get all of the TV channels above 59 removed from the UHF dial.
Well, as they did, they got rid of all 64 through 83 when they gave you cell phones.
Yeah, exactly. They're taking that particular frequency range for third generation wireless, mm-hmm. which I think is probably what you're looking at yeah. with what you're describing there.
Yeah.
But the thing that particularly that I thought was odd in this particular one is they're talking about a service that really can only be used to a fixed point. You can't.
It's as bad as the satellite internet service.
Bingo. That is exactly what I was thinking. And it's not like it's all of the satellite internet services. It's just the first ones to roll out gave you a nice fat download pipe, but you were still stuck with they say 56K, but you know, if you know the protocol, you know that's actually a 32K uplink.
Yeah.
So if you have something, you know, if you want to do video conferencing or something like that, forget
luck.
It. This is useless.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is absolutely useless.
Absolutely. I actually set up a couple of those dishes and, you know, I felt bad setting them up for the customer. I felt bad. I was like, dude, just get a 56K modem. Forget this thing for now. Wait till Roadrunner comes to your town.
Now, how do you feel about the other satellite provider there, Starband? Have you?
I haven't used it yet. Haven't seen it yet. The one I used was Direct PC.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, God, it's terrible. I actually got rid of my own satellite dish for my TV on my house. They made me so angry. I went back to cable. It was so bad, I didn't want to support the company in any way, shape, or form.
I can understand that. My understanding is at this point in time, they're not offering that new anymore. Of course, I might be mistaken about that. So So don't take that as gospel.
Well, I know for a little while they were offering a combination dish, so you could do your TV and your internet on the same dish. But I haven't heard anything about that in probably almost a year and a half now.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing they're offering now is they are offering a combo dish, but it's pointed at a different bird now.
Mm.
Because they're now teamed up with Starband, and they're doing bidirectional by satellite, which you still have that terrible lag time.
Yep.
I mean, to send a signal from ground to satellite and back to ground again is something like a third of a second.
Yeah.
You know, 300 millisecond delay there. So for gaming, it's still pretty useless. But if you're just looking for bulk data, you got it.
Yeah, especially if you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. As for this thing, the only improvement I can see on it over something like DirectPC is the fact that there's not going to be that lag time caused by the bounce off the satellite. But I'm concerned because they talk about feeding 256K bits per second to each customer that's using it,
yeah.
or offering a 256K bit pipe, I should say. And I think there's only something on the order of 30 megabits per TV channel anyway.
Yeah.
That's going to run out pretty fast.
Well, the ones that are buying up the UHF stations, they're not using a digital system, using an analog system.
Right, exactly.
They're planning on, you know, buying them up as the federal government forces the analog stations off the air.
Right, and what these guys are actually trying to do is piggyback it on a digital signal.
Yeah, so they're...
And of course, right off the bat, before you've done anything else, you already have to give up about a megabit and a half of your bandwidth at least...
Just for TV.
Just for the video.
Yeah, and then, you know, how many other features are they going to offer you on that video? They're offering you numerous other sound channels, other languages, mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of times they offer you what they're supposed to. The digital TV is supposed to offer you three channels on that, on each channel is supposed to have three sub-channels in it to watch, to do video and whatnot. Now, if Clear Channel does that, they're not going to be able to offer all their channels over their signal.
Not only that, but in order to do the sub-channels, it's required that you don't run full resolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to run either the 540 or the 720 or the 480 line mode.
See, Clear Channel doesn't actually depend on their technology. They depend on their monopoly.
Yeah, they do. I can't say it any better than that. You know, they're kind of like Microsoft in that respect.
Look what they've done to radio around here, radio and TV around here.
Absolutely.
I mean, they bought up all the channels and then just, you know, went to the record companies and the other, you know, other companies said, hey, what do you want us to play? We don't care what the listeners actually want because we're in control and it doesn't matter what they want now.
Well, you know, here's the thing, too. Back in September... shortly after the World Trade Center incident,
yep.
They put out a list of songs that it was suggested
not to play. Yeah. Oh.
So I brought a CD of them here.
And, great.
Of course, played them.
Beautiful.
But you know, can you imagine? Here's one of the things that struck me. One of the local stations, which shall remain nameless. But it is a Clear Channel property, and it is a classic rock station.
Hmm.
So that should make it clear which one it is, because Clear Channel emblazons their name across every station they own.
Well, they bought all the classic rock stations and shut them down, too.
But I ask you, isn't Stairway a staple of the classic rock format?
Quite right.
Can you imagine a classic rock station not being able to play Stairway? Well, that's the what they were looking at.
Yeah,
that was on the list.
There was a George Harrison song on there too. I couldn't believe it.
I can't remember which one it was.
Yeah.
I had the list at one point in time, but
it's still on the website, I think, isn't it?
It may be. Yeah.
Radio Critter.
Yeah, that's true. You can always look it up for the listener's sake. If you're we can't look it up right now, right here, but if. If you've got access to the web, you can go to radiocritter.com and look it up, because it's still on there. some of the entries on it were completely unbelievable.
Really? All right, I have to take a look at that when I get home.
Absolutely. Well, anyway. Let's see. Thanks to a new innovation by Cisco Systems, things like high-speed internet access, video streaming, and IP telephony are going places that they previously couldn't. Hugh Barris, the technical leader, and his team of engineers at Cisco created the Cisco Long Reach Ethernet broadband networking solution, the industry's first end-to-end product line for delivering 5 to 15 megabit performance over Category 1, Category 2, or Category 3 wiring, with Ethernet-like performance that reaches up to 5,000 feet.
So I can bring my BNC back out, huh?
If you really, really want to, yeah.
Yay!
If you consider the fact that most buildings are wired for voice and not data, the market opportunity for LRE is quite vast, said Barris. By offering Ethernet-like speeds at regular phone wire, it reaches up to 5,000 feet, and coexisting with phone traffic, LRE brings reach advanced services such as next-generation video on demand to places that it has not gone before. Okay.
I don't have a phone, and I want one of those.
Now, I'm going to ask a very simple question. Does this or does this not sound like sound like DSL?
Yeah, it does sound a lot like that.
Yeah.
You know what I like even better is I lived down in Georgia for a little while. And you know what they actually have for the internet providers? Competition. It's amazing.
What?
They have two cable companies.
Dear God.
Two cable companies.
They have room for that?
Yes. Yes. And
we don't have room for that here
in
New York.
No way. No, you know. No. But what they do is they actually offer telephone service over the cable line. And so you get one bill. You have one cable line coming into your house. It gives you your Roadrunner, your cable TV, and your telephone. And they send you one bill. And you know what? It's a heck of a lot better than what we're spending up here. It's just too bad the Southerners live down there.
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
And again,
note,
we'd like to say that here at WRBI, the opinions
that's
are
my
those
opinion.
Of the participants. Not necessarily those of WRBI, who in fact loves the South.
Right.
They just haven't been there.
Anyway, they continue by saying that for older buildings that are not wired for Ethernet, LRE presents enormous opportunity. Owners of multi-unit buildings such as hotels, apartments, business complexes, universities, hospitals, manufacturing floors, and government agencies are now able to deliver an unprecedented number and variety of new broadband applications to end users. This means much faster internet access for those who still access the internet at painfully slow dial-up speeds, which is highly frustrating and unproductive.
You know, I never used to think of dial-up speeds as painfully slow until I got some kind of cable connection at work, and now I use it all day, every day, and now we have it at home.
Well, they have you guys
and
on...
Now I'm spoiled.
They have you guys on DSL, don't they?
I don't know. They have us on Roadrunner.
Oh, they do?
Oh, you mean at work. I don't know what they have us on. They had us on one DSL service, but they went out of business suddenly, and we lost all communication with the outside world except for one dial-up computer.
Yeah, that's what I was...
That was torturous.
That's what I had been remembering.
And an office full of 12 people all trying to get their email off of one computer.
Well, if it's any consolation, the same thing happened to one of the cable providers some short time ago, actually. If you had your cable internet access via AT&T at home, they just...
Poof.
Switched it off. That was the end of that. I mean, something has come in and taken its place. I'm not sure exactly what yet, but...
Yeah, that was the thing. Nothing came in to take its place, and it took us a month and a half, 2 months of trying to sort out who our next server was going to be. Well, no. I think originally it was mostly bureaucracy on our part trying to find the lowest price, and then after that we had issues with the group that's currently serving us.
I'm not
actually getting
this data stream.
No, they will not. They will not.
Okay. We do need to take a really quick break here for a station ID. So stay tuned. Little Brother will be back in a couple of minutes.
This is 91.5 WRPI Troy.
One to keep you. warm little mother. Something, you warm little mother. Yeah, I've been looking out for you. I know exactly what you're up to. You don't need to play your game with me. Don't wanna wait around for your strategy. Yet I'll look for a treasure you have found. Why do you hunt when you hunted down? I need to get just a little more action. You're no fun for me. You're playing with a slow ignition. I'm giving you my full permission to hook in my kitchen now. Dance for me.
And you're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy. The show is Little Brother. The topic is technology, and the opinions and views expressed therein are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of WRPI, staff or management, the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute or Rensselaer Student Union, and opposing parties. Sorry, responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint can request airtime for a rebuttal.
Yeah, like all those of you who love Dixieland, please feel free to call in schedule your rebuttal.
If we can understand you.
So now, Josh, during the break, you were making a few comments about the about how great the service was down there. You want to continue on that one?
Yeah, the service was really good. It's just the infrastructure is a lot newer. Their cable system hasn't been in place for 20 years, and so it's easier. They're more flexible.
You know? Yeah, I think that's understandable. Well, I mean,
and much smaller population base too to deal with.
That's probably why the infrastructure is so much younger, because it took them a little bit longer to get to it.
But the services they have down there really just blow ours away, and it's, you know, with all the money that's generated in New York and in the northeastern part of the United States, is where most of the country's capital comes from. We ought to have the newest infrastructure, and we ought to have the newest technology, and we're just not seeing it.
We ought to have, but as long as they can squeak by with the bare minimum, they will.
Yeah, I know.
As long as they could still make money with that, they will.
I was talking to my brother. He went to Japan last year, and he says on the street, people had these cell phones that had the color LCDs, and they were video conferencing with each other on these cell phones as they're walking down the street. And it's like, when are we going to get that technology?
Do we really need that technology?
Do I want to be walking along, you know, with a camera looking up my nose while I'm talking to somebody, you know? Do I want that?
Let me know which hair is out of place, please.
Think of the possibilities, though. I mean, you could subscribe.
You know, that's what I like about email. Not only can they not see you, you know, if you're sitting there in your bathrobe, also, you know, you don't give away anything with vocal inflection or whatever. Now, if I like the anonymity of email so much, I mean, Why would I want a video film?
Be like the Jetsons. You ever see the Jetsons where they have that thing that comes down and shows them a picture of them all looking made up and whatnot when they're on the video phone?
Fire. Maybe you could subscribe to one of those like pornography live video streaming things. And then just anywhere you go, you could duck into a public restroom and take your phone with you. And
you don't even have to duck in a public private restroom. You know, a public restroom. You
it might be preferable,
You just sit right there on the chair.
Or, or like a radio station studio.
Hop on the train, get in front of a bunch of people and pull out some porn. What the hell?
Yeah, just don't want to try that one in a movie theater. We don't need a repeat of Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think people do in those movie theaters? The only reason anybody messed with them is because he is Pee Wee.
You're probably right.
Yeah. Who doesn't do that in an X-rated theater? What do they think goes on?
They raided Pee Wee's house last month. Did you hear about that? Actually, in November.
They found all this child pornography and kitsch.
Yeah, and kitsch.
And Howard Stern was talking about all the investigators. Yeah. Now, is it child pornography or is it kitsch? You know, they show like a picture of a naked child with like, plastic daisies or something. Is this kitsch or is this child pornography? We don't know.
Pee-wee's an
but they did. They found
gentleman.
Messes of all of it.
Yeah,
just a mess of it.
He was just making his comeback too.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you mean.
No, he wasn't. He was on You Don't Know Jack, and that disappeared.
And he had that movie. He was in that movie Blow with Johnny Depp.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fair statement that he was trying to make a comeback.
Oh, I didn't say he wasn't trying to. I was just saying he wasn't.
Okay, I think it's a fair statement that he was making a comeback. Unfortunately, he kind of blew it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they called that film Blow. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Anyway.
Pee-wee. Mecha Lecha High, Mecha Hiney Ho.
Okay. Anyway.
Genie said.
I remember.
Let's see. I got an item here from the BBC. They said that the security of wireless networks is getting a makeover in an attempt to secure them from drive-by hacking attempts.
Yes.
No more war driving.
Yeah, it's about time because really we should, we don't want to see too much variety in the drive-by crime genre.
Well, no, the British want to secure
We like it, plain and simple drive-by shootings, that's it.
Well, the thing of it is, Josh, the Brits want it secure, I'm certain, but the thing of it is, the company that's doing the development work is American. It's RSA.
We want it secure because you can see our stealth aircraft between cell towers. The British figured that out. It was on the news last month.
All right.
Huh. When a stealth aircraft is between cell towers, they can see the signal degrade, and then they try and bring it up on radar, and if it's not there, it's a stealth aircraft.
Oh, yeah. China figured that out, too.
China, and so did Serbia. That's how they shot one down.
They figured that one out quite some time ago, actually. We talked about that one, too, a few months ago.
Now, we're talking about England here. I mean, they have CCD cameras, on every corner. So even if you're driving by looking for signals, your car is probably on videotape.
Yeah.
That's true. They we're talking about the nation with one video camera for every 40 citizens.
Oh, but hey, the police don't carry guns.
Yeah, but they have that all-seeing public eye.
I know. I was being sarcastic.
I saw it everywhere I went. There were cameras everywhere.
I prefer the police have a gun.
Were
and
there?
Take
I
the
didn't
cameras
see
off
them.
The
okay, I
wish I had seen them. I'd have mooned them or something.
There was one right on the hotel. There were a bunch of them. Right.
Okay, you guys have just set me off on two tangents here.
Uh-oh. Let's proceed with the story.
Tangent number one has to do with this concept called surveillance. Where basically what you're doing is, instead of letting yourself be watched from above, you're watching from below. So now we're not talking about mounting the cameras on the floor and looking up. We're talking about from the lower levels of society that Joe Sixpack should be carrying a camera around and filming what he sees. Mm. But on the page, there was a webpage that talks about this, and I wish I had the URL with me right now, but I don't. There is a video where what they did was they went into a Sears. The guy had a camera in his hat, had another camera in his hand. Now, the camera in his hand was down along his side in a non-threatening position, but the camera in his hat was hidden.
Mm-hmm.
He walked up to a clerk and asked them about the bubbles in the ceiling. You know the bubbles, those smoky bubbles that they hide the cameras behind.
Theoretically, they hide them behind. Well, everybody knows they're there.
A lot of times they just put bubbles up, but you still don't know where the camera's
they
looking.
They should save the cash and just put up bubbles.
They do. A lot of times they just put the bubbles up with no cameras behind them.
But anyway, he asked the clerk about them, and the clerk said, I don't know, I think it's part of the air conditioning system. So he decided this guy was an idiot and moved on to the next person.
Yeah, that's a good decision to make because ain't no air flowing out of those bubbles, you know.
The next person he talked to said maybe he should talk to security about that because he didn't know. And the next question to the guy proved that he did know because he became very hostile. When they went and approached security, he talked to security people, and the security people said, well, you know, that's the video cameras that are watching the story. He says, well, you don't think that the video cameras make people uncomfortable? The security person at this point says, well, only criminals should be uncomfortable at being watched and filmed.
Yeah,
what about the person ducks behind the clothing rack to pick their nose? You know,
this is where it gets really good, because this is where he brought the camera up, pointed it at the security person, you know, the camera that was in his hand, pointed it at the security person, and watched him squirm.
Yeah.
The other direction I was going to go in, I forgot, so we'll skip it for now. Anyway, back to the story. Some experts fear that, respected security firm RSA has found a way to improve the notoriously weak encryption system used by wireless networks. However, some experts fear that the fix comes too late to save the reputation of wireless networks, and the only way to protect them is to use other security systems. Others say the RSA improved security will not help all wireless network users, as many are still not taking the most basic steps to protect themselves. As of late, wireless or Wi-Fi networks have become very popular since they're cheap and easy to set up and remove the need for lots of unsightly expensive cables. The damage has already been done so far as WEP is concerned. The method Wi-Fi uses to scramble data, known as wireless equivalent protocol, has been comprehensively defeated by both security professionals and hackers. The vulnerabilities have led some hacker groups to engage in war driving expeditions, which map wireless networks and show which ones are open to attack.
I got a real easy fix for that.
Shoot.
Buy a Macintosh with an airport.
Now, why is that a fix?
Because it actually works and it's secure. The wireless airport, the Apple wireless network.
Now, what have they done differently from regular 802.11?
I'm really not sure, to be honest with you. But I know that it works and it's secure. I was reading up on it because I was considering doing that myself.
Okay.
Get rid of all my wires.
Maybe they've brought in the new. Maybe they brought in the new fast packet keying that this article is talking about.
Maybe they have
The old one. Yes, there was encryption there, but the problem was that there was a very limited selection of keys to work with, and it didn't take much guessing to figure out which key was in use in a particular location.
Maybe they should encrypt it in Navajo.
There you go.
Yeah.
Why not? It worked in World War II.
That's right.
Sometimes the low-tech solution is the best one.
Yeah,
you gotta find a Navajo-speaking modem. That might be difficult.
The Indians aren't big producers of technology. You're quite right. It's unfortunate.
Yes, it is, actually. An experimental new lie detector that measures sudden flashes of heat from around the eyes may soon provide another line of defense against terrorism, according to UPI.
Oh, we've heard these sorts of things before.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Oh, we'll scan everyone's face. It'll prevent terrorism. We'll do this. It'll prevent terrorism.
Take off your shoes.
The new lie detector.
We're going to strip search everyone. It'll prevent terrorism.
And the new lie detector suppositories.
You have nothing to hide.
You have no C4 in your anus, do you?
This is the first technology that allows lying to be measured or lying to be detected without any contact with the subject whatsoever, instantaneously in real time, said lead researcher James Levine, an endocrinologist at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. You don't need to hook them up to anything. You don't need any sophisticated experts to analyze the data. The researchers say prototypes of the device may aid security operations within the next 2 years in such areas as airports and border checkpoints. However, Levine is also concerned about the potential ethical ramifications of the technology if it ever becomes developed for the open market. If this technology really becomes developed to the desktop phase, you could be sitting in front of your boss and he could ask you, do you think you can meet your deadline? And you can say, sure, of course. And he'll say, I know you're lying. Levine said in an interview with UPI,
But since when has anybody ever developed stuff like this for desktop usage? I mean, we don't have, like, nobody said that when they came out with a face scanning technology.
Well, the thing of it is, though, the face scanning technology, you know, presumably if you're face-to-face with somebody, you can reasonably, by other means, determine accurately what the identity of this person is, if you really need to know. But you can't verify the veracity of what they're saying.
Yeah.
Ass scanning technology.
That's what we need.
You're lying. Bend over.
Okay. Anyway.
Wow. Sorry.
But I mean, Lil, what you were saying about technologies being developed for the desktop, there was this technology that was called voice stress analysis that has been developed for the desktop. Frankly, I don't hold a lot of stock in it because of the simple fact that I've read the theories behind it and they don't wash. But, you know, it involves...
Yeah, besides, then you only know that they're lying. You don't necessarily know what they're, you know, unless it's a distinct yes or no question, you don't know what the truth is. You just know that they're not telling it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you know somebody is not telling the truth, you can start to ask leading questions that may get some sort of a response. You know, the problem I had with the voice stress analysis technology is they're saying that they successfully applied it to recorded material. And allegedly, the technology involves looking at the 8 to 12 hertz frequency range. And that if you see an element that's higher in that frequency range, it's probably an untruth. But the fact of the matter is, I know of no recording or broadcast medium that carries frequencies that low. Mm. Most even high-end audio equipment bottoms out at around 15 or 20 hertz. That's outside of that range. To apply it over a telephone, please. Telephones bottom out at 300 hertz. That's nowhere near 12 hertz. Mm-hmm. So, but back to this other technology here. The estimate that they had, and unfortunately it's not on the portion of the article I have in front of me. Wait, yes, here we go. The research team had 20 volunteers commit a mock crime and then assert innocence under experimental conditions at the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. 8 of the volunteers stabbed a mannequin and stole $20 from it, while the rest had no knowledge of the crime. The device accurately detected lying roughly 80% of the time, a precision level comparable to standard lie detecting polygraph tests performed by experts.
Which are not admissible in any court.
That is absolutely true. And that 20% of the time is the reason.
Were they actually registering flashes of heat around the person's eyes because they were lying or because they were embarrassed because they just stabbed a mannequin for no good reason?
Why didn't they take its sneakers?
Maybe it wasn't wearing sneakers.
But it had $20.
I would have taken the mannequin. That would look great in my apartment.
Yeah, you could dress her up in different things for the holidays.
Okay, don't go to... Whatever you do, do not let the words real doll escape your mouth. Are we clear?
Well, but you can dress one of those up for the holidays, too. Nice little derby for St. Patrick's Day. It'd be great.
But the thing that concerns me is this. It says 80% of the time it detected an untruth. But my understanding of it is that 25% of the time it false positived. Now, I ask you, if you have 1 million people going through, let's just pick a number chosen arbitrarily, but let's say you've got a collection of airports that 1 million people go through a day. How many false positives is that? And how many of those people really are terrorists? And of those terrorists, how many of them are actually going to get through? Because they're in that 20% that didn't get caught. Okay, all you've got to do is send 5 terrorists. One of them's going to get through.
One of them gets
through. Yeah, that's for sure. The best way I've been able to think of to combat the terrorism is the best low-tech means. It's a dog. Dogs. They don't fail. They sniff out the bombs. You know?
Yeah, besides, before you know it, the terrorists will figure out ways to get around it by wearing, like, some kind of cooling glasses or something. You know, who knows? Yeah.
Well, actually, one of the suggestions that I had heard on how to beat this was to go in drunk.
Oh.
That makes sense.
Because that establishes a high baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could work. Or, you know, I don't know. What is the deal with the 20% of people that it doesn't work on? I mean, do they have something in common? Is it possible that they, you know, have something about their physiology that makes it difficult to read them? Or is it just chance that it can't read them? Because then you could figure out who it wouldn't be able to read as well and send them through, too.
Just don't know.
Who knows?
Okay.
Low-tech solutions to high-tech issues.
Yeah, well, here comes another one. Earlier this month, Universal Music, or last month, actually, Universal Music introduced copy protection for their line of audio CDs using Midbar Technology's Cactus Data Shield. The first disc released with the Midbar protection was More Fast and Furious, music from and inspired by the motion picture. The Fast and the Furious.
That actually inspired music?
Recording, what's that?
I think I downloaded that the other night.
how did that movie inspire music? That's what I want to know.
Who knows? According to stories posted online, Universal plans to copy protect their entire lineup of CDs. The announcement that Universal would copy protect their CDs, ostensibly to prevent users from ripping MP3s for trade online, came the day before the launch of Press Play, which is Sony and Universal's subscription outlet for digital audio. Why does that not surprise? With a purchased copy of More Music CD, I discovered it's possible to copy the disc and burn MP3s from it using software freely available for download online. This is from Patrick Norton. He's one of the screensavers from Tech TV. With the copy protection working, a Windows PC shows the files and automatically runs the Cactus PJ audio player that comes with the CD. The Cactus PJ player features difficult-to-see buttons and needs a second window to show track information. It also shows up as possible spyware on AdAware 5.6. In theory, it's the only way to play audio from a CDS-protected disc on a Windows machine. Without significant effort, you won't play this disc on any other player, nor will you rip it to MP3 audio. A number of computer systems with DVD drives actually don't see the copy-protected version of the disc. The systems that didn't see the copy-protected files, the ones that we understand are installed by Midbar Tech's Cactus Data Shield, just showed normal audio CD. On the computers that the copy protection didn't work, you can see all 14 CDA tracks on More Fast and Furious, while track 1 wouldn't play using Winamp, WMP, Music Match, etc. The rest of the tracks play normally. More importantly, all of the tracks were rippable to MP3 format. Anybody want to create a CDDB entry for this one? It took a while to figure out, but it turns out that the DVD drives in the systems that we tested see right through Midbar Technology's copy protection. The drives don't see the files CDS installed on the audio CD, nor are they confused by the table of contents tweaking done by CDS. We pulled the DVD drive, an NEC DV5700A, and tested it out on a number of different Windows 98 and XP systems, and none of the machines had any trouble seeing or ripping all the tracks, or playing tracks 2 through 14. NEC doesn't normally sell retail, but they supply DVD drives to Dell. In fact, all of the Dell systems tested, the ones with DVD drives, saw through the copy protection. And of course, none of them can play back the first track on the CD, no matter what program we tried. Also, you can't find the Cactus PJ player on the audio CD to play the tracks the way Universal prefers. Is this copy protection? Here's the better question. Are all Dell owners with DVD drives that buy a CDS-protected disc in violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act? Perhaps if they purchase the NEC DVD drive just for the purpose of circumventing the copy protection, they are. They said they contacted Midbar Technology, the makers of CDS, and Universal Music, and are waiting to hear back from Midbar. Universal's offices were closed until a couple days ago, before the article was written, for the holidays. Comments? Mine was more along the line of, oops.
Yeah, really. I mean, Dell is America's number one PC. You figured they would have tested it with those.
Yeah, and I mean, I've occasionally had people ask me for advice, you know, on what to buy. And usually the first thing out of my mouth is to try to find somebody to build them a custom job.
And if not...
But if they're going to buy something first tier, yeah, Dell.
That's the same thing I say.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, We got about 6 minutes left to the show here, and I'm not seeing any sign of Faisal, and I'm thinking he overslept again, which means that probably we're going to shut the station down after the end of this show, because I have someplace else I need to be. At any rate,
you could just put a CD in there and just put it on endless loop.
Oh, Faisal is here.
Oh, good.
Okay. I guess he was just waiting out in the lobby then. Okay. We have the year 2001 in review, the winners and losers, according to mp3newswire.net. First of all, we'll do the winners. First, the legal industry. When the motto for the year 2001 is innovation followed by litigation, you know the biggest winners are the lawyers. Number two, Napster clones. With the closing of Napster, what did millions of net music fans do? Well, they went someplace else to trade music and turned several Napster clones into the most downloaded programs of 2002. Biggest winners are Morpheus and Kazaa, both of which tap into the fine Dutch Fast Track network to facilitate trades and presently average 1.3 million downloads a week on download.com. Apple iPod, less than half the size and weight of the Nomad jukebox, plus a FireWire connection that can fill the player's 5-gig hard drive in only 10 minutes. Yeah, isn't that juicy? When so many Windows and Linux users desire a Mac-only device, you know they've done something right. MP3 product manufacturers. Do you know who are not listening to the threats of the powerful recording industry? The even more powerful electronics manufacturing industry. The CD player market is a seasoned one, and the cassette player market is riding aging technology. Both are flat growth items, and most families already have several of them in the house. The MP3 format, on the other hand, offers plenty of growth, not only with the sale of MP3 portable players, but MP3-enabled CD players that have prodded consumers to consider a new CD player without waiting for the old one to break. And let's not forget those who make CD burners and car stereo equipment. The technology is getting smaller too, meaning digital music may only find its way into embedded in other products beyond PDAs and cell phones, already adding MP3 capability. Number five, Sonic Blue. Despite all the large electronic manufacturers entering the MP3 market in full force, Sonic Blue's Rio line has managed to remain the dominant player in the digital music portable arena. That's no easy trick, even if they did create the market. If they can continue to hold their significant market share, look for one of the electronic giants like Matsushita or Toshiba to make a bid for the company. Number six, Vivendi Universal. They won a $53 million lawsuit in the MP3.com case, almost triple what the other labels got. Number seven, artists and web royalties. When the Recording Industry Association of America proposed Sound Exchange, a new agency they set up for collecting royalty fees for digital broadcasts under the DMCA, artists were up in arms. They had a good reason, as the original plan had the artist's record label as the conduit to disperse the funds. Traditional record industry practices combined with creative accounting would almost guarantee that none of the guaranteed funds of the generated funds would find their way to the artists. Number eight, the Recording Industry Association of America. How can they be both a winner and a loser? We'll cover that one when we get to the losers. Let's see. Now the losers. First, the American internet music industry. The dot-com crash, DMCA, music industry lawsuits, bad business decisions have severely weakened, if not killed, the notion of American internet music industry autonomous of the traditional recording industry. Number two, internet radio. EM radio once dabbled in a song streaming, as did hundreds of other amateur webcasters. Sites like MyCaster offered an MP3 desktop player that empowered anyone with a PC, a 56K modem, and no technical knowledge with the ability to send a stream and broadcast to the world in 10 minutes. The DMCA ended that by imposing royalties terrestrial stations don't have to pay. Because of this, the opportunity for individual expression through music selection is endangered, and amateur radio is not the only one at risk, as net radio may be ripe for the next music cartel. Let me see here. Number three, Napster. Created one of the biggest grassroots efforts in the history of the world. Now it's dormant, and thanks to better Napster clones, irrelevant. It's as simple and tragic as that. Number four, MusicNet and Press Play. Recently released, these major label services were greeted with public indifference. Number five, Secure Digital Music Initiative, or SDMI. Infighting and the failure to develop anything beyond a poor watermarking technology had made this net music copyright protection group as irrelevant as Napster. Number 6, Zolax. This peer-to-peer program took up less than 400K of space on the drive, had no spyware, was simple and easy to use, and was the first to allow simultaneous searches of multiple files. One of the best new Napster clones to appear, fear of litigation forced its creators to shut the project down. Number 7, Intel's MP3 players. The Intel Pocket Concert was one of the best MP3 players that has ever been tested. It was also one of the best-selling digital music portables on Amazon.com. Now, Intel's entire MP3 portable line has been discontinued, a casualty of the company's decision to close its entire consumer products division. And lastly, the RIAA. Now, how can they be both a winner and a loser? Well, let's see. They succeeded in shutting down Napster in the courts, which was a win on their part. Shutting down Napster only drove users to dozens of Napster clones, making music trading more popular than ever. That was a loss on their part. They had a successful lawsuit against MP3.com. They brought in $120 million for the major record labels, which was a big win. Their threatening letters to VCs and the dot-com bust successfully shut off all capital to net music firms. With capital cut off, lesser competition strangled to death, while stronger companies like MP3.com and eMusic became cheap acquisition targets for the industry, which was another win on their part. The aggressive actions by the RIAA spurred press stories on the music business that exposed the more dubious practices of an industry the Department of Justice has labeled a cartel. This has created a PR debacle for the industry that, as we are now aware, and even angry consumers view the industry as nothing more than a ripoff, overcharging for the music while stealing from the artists that they love. What did the industry do? Well, they raised prices again and began removing the ability of CDs to play on PCs. Sinking public opinion and a growing customer attitude that CDs are overpriced will hurt sales more than the free trading of MP3 files, a big loss.
They cost more now than they did 6 years ago.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
And fair or not, the RIAA president, Hillary Rosen, and Osama bin Laden are interchangeable in the eyes of many net-savvy consumers. When your industry spokesperson is suffering as severe an image problem as she is, it reflects back on you. The failed License to Virus writer on the anti-terrorism bill only further demonized the RIAA despite their protests to the contrary in an open letter to Billboard. A serious loss. Well, Faisal's here and he's waiting patiently to start doing a window on Islam. So we're going to bring another episode of Little Brother to a close here. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll be here not next week, but in 2 weeks. We will be back. Have a good day.